then, Swami, we turn it over to you.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You can see me smiling like anything. The reason is that we struggled very hard. We had some internet issues here. I was 2 days ago invited to be with the Prime Minister of India, and he said, India has better internet than Germany, it is known, therefore everyone should go to India. He said jokingly. So yes, our internet is very not good, and I hope it will serve us well. So I'm very relieved that we made it really in the last second. The subject matter on the brink of death is a subject that has tremendous power in it, a potency to enrich our life, and a potency to give us the impulse to move forward wherever we are now, and come to our next stage. And how this is so, I hope to be able to discuss a little bit today. Now, just to tune all of us in, I would like to read to you something which I have read in the past. It's from Steve Jobs, who I think had an inkling, a kind of premonition that he would die a relatively early death. And he said in one well-attended class in the university something that brings us really right to the subject. He said, remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I have ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There's no reason not to follow your heart. There's nothing to lose because externally we'll lose everything. But there's a lot to gain because through a genuine spiritual practice, we can gain those things which the world cannot give, but which the world also cannot take away. This is what you attain through spiritual practice or spiritual harvesting. You attain something the world cannot give to you, and the world can also not take away from you. There is a philosopher called Chanakya Pandit who has written a book called Niti Shastra, in which he gives practical tips to live. And what we have just heard from this American entrepreneur is really discussed very nice in by him. He said, if you want to make spiritual advancement, you should think that death might come in the very next moment. But if you want to be materially happy, you should think you will never die. It's an ironical statement. How can you just blend out a major part of reality and prosper in life? in ancient cultures, this practice to be mindful of one's own death was very, very much prevalent. I remember visiting a lama, a high Buddhist priest in the Himalayas in Dharamshala, and we were talking, and after some time into the conversation, he opens a curtain and shows me there's a skeleton. I went like, "Ooh!" He said, "See, in our Lord Buddha told us that we should remember that there's only a blink of an eye that separates us from our healthy muscular body and the skeleton. So by remembering this, I focus on what is important. What is it that I can really gain in this world that belongs to these things that that I will take with me? All the material things I will have to leave aside, but the things which pertain to the soul and to God are of an eternal nature, and I will take this along. I will talk about this a little later, but let us just remember that this being mindful of death was practiced in ancient civilizations. Even now, a friend from Latin America just told me that there is a festival day where they put skulls of the dead on a shelf and look at it, remembering, wow, I have only a limited time in front of me. Yogis in India often meditate on the banks of the Ganga at places where there are funeral pyres and where the relatives bring the recently deceased members of the family and burn them. Although in our modern civilizations, which I would call the civilizations of repressions and suppressions, death is sadly left to an industry who takes care of, you know, bringing the corpses out of your house, then giving them in a somewhat decent external appearance so that the relatives can say goodbye to a smiling corpse. In our civilization, where all these practices are so to say something no one discusses, death is often put aside, put behind the curtain. But the ancient civilizations, they opened the curtain, just like that monk in the Himalayas did for me, to let us peek into the ultimate secret, to let us have a glimpse of our physical mortality, which always hints at our spiritual immortality. Why, and I want to say this again, why is this important? Well, it is important because it helps you to look at the things that matter most, that time or the world cannot take away. I have a friend in Australia. His wife was making a movie with Mick Jagger, a famous modern man. He once gave a lecture, this friend of mine, about how to determine in life what is really important. And I have a transcript of this lecture here, which I think is good for you. As you are hearing this excerpt, I would like to encourage you to do what he had encouraged his audience to do. He said, if we could turn our present life into a film, mine would run 68 years to date. And then, if we would speed up the movie so that it took only 1 minute to show our entire life, the good, the bad, the friends, the enemies, and everything else, what would it all mean in that short span of time? Think about it. Imagine a movie producer would have been there when you were born. And what would he have seen? Imagine the movie, or the cameraman would have accompanied you to your first birthdays. What would he have filmed? Who would have been there? Imagine the same cameraman would have accompanied you to the school and then later to the high school. What would he have seen? What would have been an important moment? Perhaps when you excelled in a sport competition, or maybe when you had a small accident. Imagine that movie man would have, or cameraman would have come with you when you met friends, which were very important. But also he would have been there when you met that person who totally disappointed you in life. Who could have been this person who was either important or disappointing? What are the important, really significant moments in your life? Maybe when you met a spiritual teacher. Maybe when you had for the first time a conversation where you could really dig deep and felt confident to reveal some things about you. Now, if you take the movie of your life, and let us make this, you can do this experiment up to the final moment when you die. You can go in an imagined but likely future, and then send or just show this movie in 2 minutes time. What would stand out? What would be really important? I remember in the first season that I told you about such an experience. I had been in a hospital in south of Germany, near Passau, and when the surgeons performed the surgery on me, they were a little inattentive and they cut a main arteria, and all of a sudden as much blood as you can find in all the blood banks in America. It was just coming like so much. And I came into a very dangerous situation. The monitors were going crazy. And I remember this moment. I had dislodged from the body for a moment, and I was a witness of my own surgery. I was floating above the body, and then I had this movie which I'm talking about. My whole life ran past me like a movie put on fast forward. And I noticed so many things I was worried about were just worried about at that time, I wanted to say, were just passing by really quick. And I could identify three or four, just now maybe even five, now where I remember, incidents which were very, very important and which made me the person I am I am now. They were like, switches on the train tracks, which decided that my train was going to the monk existence and not the CEO, which my parents planned for me, which I at that time wanted to become when I was young. There were some switches in the track which put me where I am now, and I'm of course grateful. So yes, identify, maybe not now, but outside of this program, these switches in your own track of life, then you have the more important moments which have decided how you are at this moment and what you are doing. In the Bhagavad Gita, an ancient wisdom book, there is a chapter. It is a response to a question of Arjuna, who asks Krishna these deep questions. He says, how can one attain a spiritual destination at the time of death? How can death become a gate from where I move on to a spiritual or in a blissful, realized, eternal destination? And Krishna explains that at the moment of death, there are recollections. This is, the movie of life which we were speaking about. There are recollections which sum up the consciousness and aspiration a person has cultivated throughout their life. And then this accumulated consciousness, which is made out of these important memories that impacted you, they decide what is the next destination. In Krishna's own words, yang vapi, I will chant it properly because it's such a beautiful language. Yang vapi smarang bhavam tvatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kunteya sadatat bhava bhavitaha. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O Arjuna, that state he will attain without fail. So whatever is prominent at the time of death in your consciousness, it is to this state or this situation where you will pass when you quit the body. Therefore, for wise people, life is a preparation for this final examination, which will decide where one will go next. So, to come to a very high or auspicious spiritual consciousness, so to say, spiritual practice is highly recommended. I would like to really make here an exclamation mark on what I say and underline it with red. You can't think yourself out of a situation which is an accumulation of your previous activities. You can't think yourself out of problems. You have to act yourself out of it. Because let us look a little bit into what neuroscience, but also the spiritual psychology has to say about us. All of us, from the point of neuroscience, are people who are acting according to their patterns, the inner patterns, which you could compare with a network of wires that have been molded or melted together. When you do things again and again, or think the same thoughts again and again, the same neurons fire, and if they do so, they will connect and wire together. In other words, if I always have done sports, the moment I wake up, like I do jumping jacks the moment I wake up to get the circulation going, then you will do it automatically because you are habituated. The network is established, which when you get up, you just, without thinking, boom, go and make jumping jacks. I give innocent examples. You can put everything in there. When you are worried, like many New Yorkers are when they get up, New York, phew, is a time of worried mornings, I have heard. Then you will be in the habit of worrying and doing it. So, and it is impossible to break these networks by thinking. The ancient spiritual psychology says something very simple, very similar. They say if you do things over and over again, it creates deep impressions in the mind, which can be compared with the riverbeds. And then when the river of your thoughts come, they will run through these previous impressions, which are called in Sanskrit samskaras. No? So according to our impressions, our riverbeds, which we have dug and made, our activities are already in some ways predictable, and so our thoughts. So it's not possible to think yourself out of it. You have to dig a new riverbed, so to say, or you have to make new impressions, and for this spiritual practice is so important. If you have now these outmoded things, a pen and a paper ready, or if you have a mobile telephone or anything to make notes, I want to encourage you, because I will give you hints how you can find an appropriate practice for you when you get up. I suggest for all of you a simple practice which where you prime the whole being, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual aspect of your life. When you get up, it's very good to go immediately to the, how do we call this in England, in America you call it a rest room, although no one sleeps in there, but it is somehow known as a rest room. So you go into the rest room. If you're from other countries, it means bathroom, or when you're from in Germany, you will just bluntly say toilet and shower. So you take care that your hygienic situation is good. A lot of toxins are accumulating throughout the night because both the liver and the kidneys are active at certain times in the night. And then when you come out of the shower, it's good to do something to get your circulation going. You can do simple things like push-ups, or if that is too hard, jumping jacks, or what is it called? You know, when you go, please help me. Squats, thank you. This was for the body. And then you can have a practice for the mind, to prime the mind. I totally recommend you read a little in a wisdom text, something that inspires you. See the logic why it's good to do some physical exercise, because if you do them, you will be awake and your circulation is well, and then you can concentrate by reading. And then you do something for the last dimension, that's the dimension of the heart, where we find the soul. And I would highly recommend what I do every day since 50 years. I chant a mantra. I will chant a mantra with you in a little moment. I chant the Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, where I first calm my breath, and then I chant with a focused attention towards the Supreme, and connect through the mantra with the Supreme. I do it for 2 hours, but it's not required. Half an hour is good, because I'm a monk. I'm a little bit free with my time, so I don't. I can divide the hours of the day nicely. So this is a little recommendation for spiritual practice. Do something for the entire human being to prime it, so that you can go to the deeper things. Maybe I give so many online presentations that I sometimes forget in which presentation I said what, but I would like you to understand the meaning of priming the way I'm using it here. When you have a pump in India and you use it, most of the times they are dry. You can't draw any water. So you have to bring a bucket with an outside, from an outside source of water. You pour it into the pump, and then when the water is in there, you can use it, and it is then they are able to draw water from the ground. So by these simple processes which I recommended, on the body, mind, and soul level, you can prime yourself so that you can really draw from deep inside the wealth of spiritual realization. And then, my dear everyone, you have something that the world has not given you, and the world cannot take away from you. In other words, when you have something which makes you so stable, so connected with your source, that at the time of death, it is not so difficult and dramatic. It will be like putting away one old garment and moving on to your next destination. It will not be much more dramatic than that. I want to end. Oops, I'm a little bit over time here. I can say what I wanted to say most probably when you asked your questions. So this is my little suggestion. Please remember, or I hope you caught that it is a spiritual practice which should be holistic. It should be touching on the whole human being, and this will give you a lot of spiritual treasures. You will draw out from the deeper levels of existence your spiritual wealth, and then you are very well prepared for that final moment in this which is only a gateway really to move on. You're very well prepared. And my dear everyone, when you do this, death loses its terrible, how do you say, its frightful appearance, because you have gained something in your hand which death cannot take away. Good. So Hari Prasad and Rasanath, I have somehow felt so inspired to talk about these things that I have gone over my time limit, but what to do?
Thank you so much, Satchinandan Swami. We appreciate your sharing this wisdom and your inspiration and enthusiasm. So we're going to go to questions. And we're going to do this in a slightly different way. For certain people, we will get to call on you. If a question is coming in live, then we will call on you to ask your question of our dear Swami. So we're going to start with Casey. Would you kindly ask your question?
Sure, thank you. And apologies, my question isn't super concise, but I'll try to make my way through it as quick as I can. A schoolmate of my seven, I wrote it down, so I'm just gonna read it. A schoolmate of my 7-year-old daughter recently passed away in a tragic accident. It was very upsetting for the whole school community. And my daughter has had a very difficult time grappling with death, which happens to be a topic she's asked about frequently since she was old enough to understand the concept of death. Her main issue at this point is around the idea of separation from her loved ones, notably her parents and her sisters. She understands the concepts of reincarnation in the material world and eventually an afterlife in Krishna's abode. But she wants assurances from me that her family will be together again. Do you have any advice on how I should talk to her about this? And more generally, I'm also curious, how should we think about the deep, soulful, spiritually oriented connections like those with our family that we make in this material world, and the fear of losing those connections when we die? Will we know each other again if we're able to find our way to Krishna? Sorry, that was multiple questions, but
wonderful, Casey. Thank you, and I can see you on my screen. It was very good to see you. Yes. Well,
thank you.
You may have to translate my answer to your daughter who's 7 years old. Is that did I understand correct?
Yeah, seven.
Seven. Yeah. So I never had a daughter, so I do not know how to the language. So you may have to do some translating here. It is known, you can say to your daughter, then, that when relationships are really deep, that people will meet each other when they have died and quit the body. I myself have seen this very often. See, I'm often a lecturer, and I sometimes have many people before me in the lecture hall, and I remember several incidences. I want to share with you one. I had just given a spiritual program in Zagreb. It was the next day in the fest, in the newspaper. It was called A Hall Full of Happiness, because we somehow brought all the people who came to sing. So I'm finished with the program, and I'm just going down the staircase from the high stage, and I see a woman there in the half dark, and she's all dressed in black, and her face was very white, I remember, her hair also black, and she said, "Do I know you?" My first reaction was, maybe that's an, she had an indecent or idea, you know, when someone who you don't know meets you in the half dark after you come down from the stage, where sometimes people who are on the stage, everyone looks up to them and thinks, oh, if I could just spend a little time with such a person who's so influential. So I felt very hesitant, and you know, to say, I said, not that I know, and by the way, I have something to do, and I wanted to escape. And the person again asked the question, I have the feeling that I know you from somewhere, please help me to remember. And I saw now that I had misjudged the person. It was a sincere concern. I said, well, can we maybe go to a place where it's more light, you know, and where we can more talk, not here in the darkness. We went into the hall. That was the wrong decision, because so many people wanted to speak with me. Then I said, well, let's do like this. I have here the phone number of my assistant, and you can phone him tomorrow after 10 o'clock. And we can speak a little on the phone, and then can see where to take it. So, good. Eventually we met, and we talked, and it was clear to me that yes, here was a person who was related to me, but not in this from this life. I have met many people where instantaneously there was a close connection, which normally happens after a long time. And the answer why this is so, why there is a close connection, is because there was a close connection. So your daughter, if you want to reassure her, you can say, yes, let's make a close connection, you know, let us celebrate our birthdays together. Whenever I have birthday, I will write you. Whenever you have birthday, you will write me. And you create, let us move together to the ocean and walk on the coast together, so that we really begin to love each other very much. You can say to your daughter like this. And then when we have worked at our relationship, we will for sure, it will survive death, and we will meet again. And this is a truthful answer. I'm just appealing to your creativity and your knowledge of your daughter, how to give good suggestions which will be helpful for her, and to even encourage her to make such relationships with others. Like you can say, what is the good name of your daughter?
Her name's Gray.
Gray, yes.
Yeah.
Gray, you can do like this, you know. Whenever your friends, other friends have birthday, you really think what they would love to have. And you organize this. I will help you. We will go together to the shop and see some that there's something really that they really will use. In other words, you train Gray to really be present there in relationships and don't hesitate and become what is called a giving person. Yeah. Love, Casey, happens when you give love. It's not when you take it from another person. It's like a very precious rose that grows when you water it. Mm. So you can help her to enter the rose garden of relationships and then create good relationships that will be good for her in this life, and it will help her to meet. But when it is such superficial relationships where really no bonding has taken place, then it's highly unlikely that you meet the person again. Interestingly, when there is someone who is a stark enemy of yours, who is, in other words, emotionally invested in the relationship, but with feelings of animosity, then you will also meet the old enemy from the old life. It's about the intensity of feelings or emotions. And of course, we want to cultivate these, these supporting emotions. It's about the intensity of the emotions which will make it sure if you meet. And when your daughter is a little bit further advanced and you are further advanced, you will say, and then Gray, we will let us make together a journey in this life which will bring us ultimately directly face to face with the creator who created all of this, and we will meet surely in his assembly hall. Thank you, and please greet.
Thank you.
Please greet your Gray from me. I don't know her, but say my greetings from Germany. She has greetings from Germany.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'd like to invite Bruno to ask your question, please.
Hello. It's a little loud here, but I really wanted to be with you. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
I can hear you, but I can't see you. Maybe I can see you even in a little while.
I don't know how to do that, but I'll ask my question. So God has brought me to this really not well-known saint called Saint Peter of Damascus that lived in the desert in Syria in the 12th century, and as a monk essentially, and he did this writing that it's essentially automatic writing. He didn't know what he was going to write until he would put pen to paper. And the core of his teaching is that God essentially radiates knowledge to every one of us all the time, and that the core of the spiritual process, how it works, is that we're meant to grasp this knowledge and put it into practice. And so that's both how the map works, but essentially what we're meant to do. So I would love to get your thoughts about that.
Wonderful, wonderful. This is true in all wisdom traditions. Also in our wisdom tradition, it says that the Lord is in the heart of everyone, and from him becomes knowledge, remembrance, but strangely also forgetfulness. It depends on what you wish for. Therefore, in the Bhakti tradition, we are very concerned to make our heart or shape our heart into a receiving vessel where we can receive this knowledge or wisdom that brings us further, and not forgetfulness or illusions. and to make our heart into a receiving vessel of God's knowledge there's an active process and a passive process. The active process is spiritual practice, which purifies the heart, but the passive process is to simply open what is called the sacred space in the heart. This very much is found also in the teachings of the Desert Fathers, and what I believe the saint you were referring to, I think, is one of these Desert Fathers who went into the desert and in the solitude had these amazing experiences. So these Desert Fathers, they would very much stress that we all have already a perfect receiving instrument in our, and that is our certain space in the heart, the sacred space in the heart. And they would access this sacred space in the heart very much like the yogis of the Bhakti traditions. What is done is that you calm the restless mind, which is always discussing, and you stop that inner chatter, so to say, so that you can hear the voice of God. When the inner chatter of the mind is so loud, you can't hear the voice of God. And the way we do this in the Bhakti tradition is through mantra. Mantra means that which liberates the mind from unwanted occupation. This is the inner chatter. We say again and again a mantra and focus our mind on it. And after some time, the mind becomes calm and still, like a placid lake. And then you can see to the ground of the lake and can see all the spiritual treasures you need to know. Yes, very nice. I'm a great fan of the Desert Fathers. They were I like
Philokalia.
Philokalia. I like Nicodemus very much. That is my favorite one. Yes, spiritual truth is universal. But again, let me see your good name, Bruno. Bruno, these things can be accessed through practice. Let us not be only observers of spiritual knowledge and of spiritual traditions, who stand on the fence, so to say, and never go on the other side into the land of practice. No, we should start with a practice that is relevant and relatable to us, which is suited to our present situation, and then you will become very rich in your spiritual understanding. Wonderful question. Thank you, Bruno. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So we have just a couple minutes more before the official close of the program. I'm thinking maybe we'll save further questions for the 1 p.m. Eastern mark. And if you'd like, you can just bring us to a little close. Satchinandan Swami, does that sound good?
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. You're such a conscientious host, I also thought, let us do a little practice. Why only speak about it? We should have leave this call with some spiritual experience. And I suggest we have a practice that is open to all levels of, you know, of our audience. So what I will do is, I will use this little sound machine. Let me ask you again, Hari Prasad, is the sound in the background good? Is it too loud or too soft? So, okay, good. I request you all on the call to find a comfortable position. You should be able to sit erect. Chair is all right, floor is all right. The main thing is that the spine is erect. Yes, I see here, I will say it in New York English, some guys in the room. yes, good, good. Try to open the chest a little. That's important for the breathing. You can do like I do, you know, make the arms in a U position and bring them back. And that will bring you to have a good position. Fine. When you're ready, please close your eyes. Bring your attention to your legs, starting with the feet. Move up to the hips and relax. Bring your attention to the lower and upper back and relax. To the chest and the belly, and try to relax all the muscles in this section of the body. To the back of your neck, bring your attention to the back of your head, then move up to the top of the head and the forehead and relax. Relax your many facial muscles. And finally, bring your attention to the cave of your mouth and relax. Appreciate how your whole body is relaxed. Now take a few slow and long breaths. Slow and long inhalation, and slow and long and gentle exhalation. Let's do this for a few seconds. Be aware when you breathe in, and aware when you breathe out. Now bring your attention to your heart. It's easiest when you inhale and you visualize how the ingoing breath goes to the heart area. When you exhale, You relax. It's a little bit as if you're breathing in through your nostril and then the flow of air goes down the breathing pipe, but it doesn't go to the lungs, it goes to the heart. Yes, I assume that you can feel this. No, when you breathe into your heart, you will feel a sensation of lightness. Who are you when everything that is not you is removed? Focus on what is going on in your life and then let it go. Your job, let it gently slip away. It's gone now. Your plans, they're gone now. Your worries, concerns, anxieties, let it gently slip away. And again, let us ask the question, who am I when everything that is not me is removed? Let the calm and the peace sink in a little bit deeper. We take a few deep breaths. And slowly return to room awareness. My dear everyone, sooner or later, everything that is not me will be taken away from me. So there is no need to maintain all these external things which take so much of my time and I need to invest so much energy into this. There is no reason to not follow what you already know deep inside of you. And by spiritual practice, you will discover but also stabilize this spiritual knowledge within you, and you will be able to act from that platform. In times when it's very important, in times when you really stand at crossroads, in times when you have the opportunity to throw the switch of life into another direction. I thank you very, very much. It's such a joy to make these, you know, to be practical and not just only talk, but to do something practical together. Thank you. I will turn now the word over to Hari Prasad, and he will tell us what to do.
Thank you for everyone who has stayed with us, and if you need to depart now, of course we understand. If you can continue to be with us until 1:30 Eastern time, we're very, very happy to have you. You need to talk to us that you're here, and we need to be back for one more episode of On the Brink of Death next week. Thank you. Now we'll go to further questions, and we have our An who can kindly ask her question.
Thank you very much, Hari Prasad. Before asking my question, Maharaj, I would like to express my gratitude. I so appreciate the time you take with us, as well as you sharing your knowledge and wisdom, so thank you very much. So my question is related to, actually you touched on it when you answered Bruno, but I would like, if you could speak on what is the role of the heart in spiritual life and what is its relation to the soul.
Thank you very much. The heart has been identified as the abode, or let us say the home, of the self, the true self, and of God. The Upanishads give a very fascinating, or let us say interesting, example. They compare the physical body with a tree, and just like there are certain fruits on the tree, for the senses of the physical body, there are certain fruits, you know, things you can eat, things you can see, objects of sounds, and so on. So in that tree of the body is a special heart. This is the is a special place, and it's the heart. And in that heart, there are two birds. This is the analogy. One is interested in the fruits of the tree, the fruits which the senses give us, and the other is not interested. So this is the analogy, which when we translate it, makes it clear. We have this organ, the heart, which is the abode of the soul, who when it's an illusion is interested in material life, but it is accompanied by the super soul, the Paramatma, the Lord in the heart, who constantly gives advices. See, the material things can't fulfill your deeper yearning. It is not possible. Why don't you go in the spiritual direction? I wanted to actually share with you a very, very interesting quote by C.S. Lewis. I know he is a favorite philosopher of Hari Prasad. C.S. Lewis once said, "If I find within myself a desire which no experience in this world can fulfill, I must conclude I was made of another world." So we birds, so to say, in the nest of our heart, we come at times to realize and understand that the tree cannot give us what we wish to have. The role of the heart is very crucial in spiritual life. I once wrote a novel called Broken Names, and in one of the chapters I describe that in the heart there's a fine border between the material and the spiritual dimension. You must know, when you think of heart, there are three hearts really. First, the physical heart, the pump, which pumps the blood. Then the emotional heart. And finally, the spiritual heart, where the self and the super self reside. So through spiritual practice, you actually leave the material and emotional heart and enter the spiritual heart, where you make your spiritual discoveries. Mm. So the role of the heart is very, very important in all spiritual traditions. It's interesting. I'm just preparing a seminar. I will come to the United States of America in the summer when it's hot there, not so cold, and I will give a seminar, and I'm just preparing one day of the seminar where I will discuss about the spiritual heart in relationship to chanting mantras and doing spiritual practices. But you have to make sure that you really go to the third heart, to not be confused where you are, and not be confused of the let us say experiences which you can make. Yes, thank you, Anne. Thank you.
Wonderful. So, Tia, would you please ask your question?
Sure. I'm really happy to be here, and thank you for letting me ask my question. So last week you spoke about identifying enemies or blockers to our spiritual life and trying to remove them. So, you know, good association and stuff like that. How can we remove the enemy of our mind, especially when it's fighting against our spiritual life? And what can we do when we feel our heart and our mind are at war with each other?
Wonderful, wonderful. There is in spiritual life something like an understanding of the many voices which are inside of us. It is said the heart is surrounded by these voices. One is the fearful voice, one is the angry voice, one is the the lustful voice, another is the envious voice. And it's very interesting that one branch of modern psychology has worked with this and developed with this concept. I have become very interested in this work, where I understand that I have various voices in myself. And you know, Tia, what is good to do is to call them all onto the table, a round table, a family table, so to say, and have a discussion. Because many times, Tia, there is a voice which in an almost uncultured way becomes so loud that it is drowning all the other voices. And you have to identify it. You have to say, no. For instance, when you are afraid, let us say you have to pass an examination or you have to go to a job interview and you will be interviewed on certain skill-related questions, and the night before you feel, oh my God, I think I will just fail. I'm such a failure in such situations. I'm too excited and too nervous. And then, although I might know the answer, it is overwhelmed with the fear which I have and the excitement, and then I will fail. So let us say this is the situation. So then in the evening you call, okay, everyone come together. This is only one voice. Are there other voices? This was the inner critic which we just heard. Are there other voices who have something to say? And you, and then comes the inner yogi and says, no, dear, you just breathe in and out very peacefully. Even if the one who makes the job interview will ask you, what are you doing now, young lady? You say, I'm just breathing a little, you know. And then you calm down, and then you will know what to say. I find out that we are often overwhelmed by the voice which is the loudest at the moment, but it's only one voice. Have you not been in a situation where you were maybe afraid, or you were maybe insecure, and then you met a good friend and he said, Tian, don't worry, you can do it, you know. And he might have said, why don't you jog a little in Central Park, then you will get your circulation up and your brain will have a little bit more oxygen, and then you lose all this stress and all this fear, and then you did it, and then you were in your strengths. No? So let us not become overwhelmed by the loudest voice on the round table. Let us say other voices are required. You know, I always have, when I sit down, I also have these things. For instance, at the moment, I must admit, I'm a little stressed because I have so little time and have to finish so many things. But then when the stress voice gets the better of me, I sit down and I breathe, and then the wise man in me speaks and says, don't worry. You have a lot of notes. You can come to America and give a first-class retreat based on the notes. Also, you have so much experience and you have done this now so many times. Why do you always become worried like a little schoolboy? And then the stressful person says, okay, good. Thank you. I bring other voices to the table. And I really learned this when I studied the philosophy of the Bhagavatam, where they talk about inner enemies, like the inner critic and these people who blockade. But you have an equal number of inner friends in your inner family, and just draw them to the table and say, I want to hear you now. And then you let that wise person or whatever, that hopeful person, and sometimes, dear, let the person speak who has the name, I don't care so much about these small little things. It is not so important. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Excellent. So we have a question that is from the past, and Shiva, who kindly gave us this question, is with us. How do you distinguish the mind and consciousness from the soul? So this is highly relevant for our discussion. How do you distinguish the mind and consciousness from the soul? It talks about the heart. Now, what about the mind and the consciousness?
Yes, you have to know the voice of the soul. There's an Indian wisdom story which is really far out. There was once a person who claimed to be a big astrologer, a wise man, a counselor. he spoke many languages. He said he came from the high mountains in Tibet. He just didn't look so credible. He looked like an imposter. I think in American language we will say a con man. Is that a good word? Someone who inspires some trust in you, but you feel he's a little shady. So I forgot exactly how the story works, but the important thing I remember. So finally, it was necessary to know who is this man and who is he not. So one wise man said, "I will tell you tomorrow." So the man came, he was dressed really in a special outfit, this man who where people didn't know. And this know about. So this wise man went from the back to him and gave him a solid whacking, you know, like Will Smith, you know. And this man, where there was a doubt about him, started to speak in really low class Harvard language. He really said some low class word. I don't want to repeat it here. And everyone knew, aha, that's how he really is. All his disguise fell away because he was shocked out of his facade. If you want to know the voice of the soul and distinguish it from the mind and maybe the consciousness, in Sanskrit philosophy you would say the citta, which is in compositum of all impressions, no? You need to know the voice of the soul, and when you can hear, oh, this is the right voice of the soul, then when you can hear it, then this is how does the soul sound? What is the voice of the soul? There are three qualities which are given in Shastra. It's wise, buddha, it is luminous, that is chit, it is full of ananda, and finally it is full of knowledge, wisdom, or I call it always inner knowing. And the third quality of the soul is now I found it, ananda. It's happy, it's joyful. The soul will not worry so much, only the mind will worry. The soul knows, I'm eternal, I'm passing through. Things are coming and going as they will, by the laws of nature and so on. So identify the true voice of the soul, which is Buddha, that is wise, then it's enlightened, and then it's full of joy. And there is a difference between wise and enlightened, which at the moment it will take a lot of time to explain it, and our time is coming to the close, so I want to not use up all the time for this. But find out when you are joyful without a reason, when you are able to relativate the little ups and downs, and when you come to the let us say, when you have wise decisions in your life, then you know it is a spiritual voice and not the voice of the mind and your previous conditionings. What wonderful question! And this format is really works very nice. Last session, Hari Prasad and Rasanath and Vipin and Michael, we were asking ourselves how to make the question and answer session more alive. And this really works very well. Also, when we can see the inquirer on the computer screen, it makes it somehow more personal and more relatable. Fine, so I think I will end here and give the last word to our sympathetic host. Please moderate everything.
Thank you so much, Satchinandan Swami. This has been such a meaningful experience, as always. We're very grateful for your time, and we're only sorry that it's just one episode left next week, but we will have you back again in the future.
And Hari Prasad, I have this idea. Those of you who are in New York or who are near to an airport or who have your private helicopter in your courtyard, we are intending to meet in New York in the summer in real person. And I thought when we do this, we have a little priming from my side on an interesting subject. Hari Prasad will test a little bit the atmosphere, what is relevant at that moment. And then I really wanted to do with all of you a spiritual practice session, which we can really only do when we meet, because the computer is limited in some ways. Don't be afraid now. It is something, you know, where I thought of a group meditation which leads into a mantra experience. So I'm still thinking of it, but it would be my great honor and joy to see all of you. And I think it may be intelligent, Hari Prasad, if we see that we can provide enough space for everyone, so we can register everyone, so that we know how many come. We also would love to cook for you. This also cannot be done on the computer. We can't put these delicious vegetarian meals in the computer and it falls out on your computer. It comes out on your table. It's not possible at the moment. So good.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. You're making me all the more excited. Thank you